Say What You Mean. Lucinda Williams, Protection. Heard a little bit of Lone Ranger in there from the radio series. Just a reminder, we all need to wear a mask. And it was Mumford & Sons with The Cave. I don't know why Tonto didn't wear a mask. I mean, why did just the Lone Ranger get a mask? I haven't figured that out. It's Undercurrents, back with a 10th anniversary reissue from the Black Keys in just a minute. Undercurrents, coming to you with support from the
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Are you a fan of early rock and roll, doo-wop, rhythm and blues, and 70s rock? If so, The Roots of Rock and Roll is the show for you, and KBOO Portland is the place to be Friday afternoons at 3. Dale Farr will give you a history lesson from the birth of rock and roll through the 50s and 60s. And Ray Bodwell will mine the 60s and 70s for the deep cuts, hidden gems, and variety that you won't hear on generic classic rock stations. So tune in to The Roots of Rock and Roll, Fridays at 3 p.m. on KBOO Portland, your community radio station.
Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. Seekers of wisdom have long asked the questions, who am I? And what can I be and become in this lifetime? Playwrights, poets, and novelists have used the art of the written word to examine these themes of the human experience. One of the greatest, of course, was William Shakespeare. And as today's guest writes, Shakespeare, consummate spiritual guide and astute commentator on human character. With us today on Pathways is a psychologist and spiritual teacher who studied the works of Shakespeare in order to identify key components of what it means to be fully human. Our guest is David Rico, author of the book, To Thine Own Self Be True, Shakespeare as Therapist and Spiritual Guide. Dave's almost countless books include a few that we have featured on Pathways, like Ready, How to Know When to Go and When to Stay. Dave is a psychotherapist, teacher, workshop leader, and writer who works in Santa Barbara and San Francisco. He combines Jungian, poetic, and mythic perspectives in his work with the intention of integrating the psychological and the spiritual. His books and workshops include attention to Buddhist and Christian spiritual practices. Hello, Dave, and welcome to the Pathway Show.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for inviting me.
Now, you write in your book, I kept looking for someone who might approach the topic of integrating psychology and spirituality from imagination and wisdom rather than only from the science of psychology or spiritual literature. This led me to Shakespeare. Okay, so you are obviously very familiar with Shakespeare. This book is full of Shakespearean verses from, you know, I guess almost all of his plays. And I'm wondering, what originally turned you on to Shakespeare? Was it a teacher or a specific play or performance?
It goes all the way back to high school when we read three Shakespeare plays, and I just noticed right away that there was a a level of wisdom that I hadn't seen elsewhere. And the very first experience of Shakespeare was in freshman year of high school when we read The Merchant of Venice.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed one particular quotation, which I memorized, even though it wasn't assigned, only one sentence anyway. And this is Portia speaking. And she says, she's looking at a candle one night, and she says, "How far that little candle throws its beams, so shines a good deed in a naughty world."
A good deed in a what?
Naughty world.
In a naughty world. I love it. Wow. That really speaks to today as well as any time in history, probably.
That's why I mentioned it. Yeah, it seems like it's pretty much universal and goes with every age.
So now your book contains a multitude of Shakespeare verses. Do you know exactly how many are in there?
Probably more than 100, but I don't know.
I don't
include all the plays.
All of the plays, okay. And I don't suppose that you have these verses memorized.
Many of them I do, but not all.
Right.
But what I did at first was I looked for the 25 topics that give you a profile of what a healthy personality would be like, including one that has a spiritual consciousness. So then I came up with love, ego, humility, grief, anger, fear, shadow side, joy, and so forth. And then I have a file. I've been in a Shakespeare class at City College, Santa Barbara, for over 40 years. And we've been reading one play at a time. And in each of the classes, I wrote down the quotations that touched me and seemed to make a contribution to what it would look like to be fully human and fully healthy and spiritual. And
yeah.
So I took all of those quotations and I noticed that they fit into these 25 categories. So I took quotations for each chapter, and after each quotation, I restated in modern English for people who find it hard to understand the...
Yeah, you know, I really appreciate the way that you rephrase these Shakespearean quotes. It's actually very helpful. You know, I mean, obviously you've put some effort into understanding Old English and parsing it out for us. And that was very helpful. But how did you come up? I thought it was 23 components of humanness. Maybe it was 25. I don't know. But how did you come up?
Let me check, because now you got me wondering. No, it's 25.
Okay. And how did you come up with it?
It is in three parts. Part one has eight sections. That's called Who Are We? Part two is called What Happens to Us? And then part three is Spiritual Practices.
And how did you come up with these? Now, each component of humanness is the topic of a chapter in the book.
Yes.
How did you come up with these 25?
Just out of my own head and, you know, out of my own experience. Like, I certainly have grief at times, I have anger at times, I have fear at times, I have a shadow side, I have joy at times, hopefully more and more. Then there's one on, you know, how do you know your true self? There's one on what happens when things change, and things are always changing. Meaningful coincidence, which is one of your topics. And death, what about sharing our gifts with the world? Peacemaking.
Okay, so you just divided humanness into 25 categories as you saw fit, divided into these three parts.
Yes.
And this was based on, your, you know, decades of experience as a psychotherapist and a spiritual teacher.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then in each chapter, there's like at least 15 quotes, I would imagine.
Uh-huh. Right. Well, you know, I really enjoyed going through the book and reading the quotes and with your rephrasing of them, which was quite helpful. And then you actually summarized the theme of each chapter. So it's really a kind of a interesting personal development, self-help type of book, an approach using Shakespeare. How has Shakespeare been a guide in your life and work?
Often I think of quotations at times in life when I have issues come up, and I can use a simple example, and I use this example in the book because in Macbeth, which we read in senior year of high school, we see the statement, "Give sorrow words, the grief that does not speak, whispers the o'erfraught heart and bids it break." In other words, if you are sad about something, it's good to talk about it with somebody you would trust. And when you don't do that, it keeps clawing at you and ultimately makes life more difficult for you and could even break your heart in some way, even more than the grief of what you're lamenting, the loss that you're lamenting. So that was an example of, yeah, it's when I feel sad, I should talk to somebody about it. For instance, I can talk to you as one of my friends about it. And it's not as if you're going to have an answer, but it's just getting it heard, putting it out there, helps you work through it.
Right. Well, that's
that was something I learned from him first before I knew anything about psychology, which also says the same thing. Obviously, that's what therapy is about.
Right, exactly.
Tell your therapist about your feelings. But Shakespeare certainly has a beautiful way of putting it also, so that helps.
The introduction to your book is entitled How Shakespeare Helps Us Be Human. What do you mean by being human? How would you define that for us? What does it mean to be human?
25 topics that would come alive in you. But where I got the idea of Shakespeare as the designer of our humanity is from Harold Bloom, famous professor at Yale who wrote many books about literature. And he's the one who first said what I'm saying in my experience. He says Shakespeare invented humanness. He showed us what humanness is supposed to look like.
I see.
Of course, as I say in the book, Ralph Waldo Emerson said something like that 100 years before. So people have noticed over the centuries, Shakespeare died in 1616, that Shakespeare was on to something about what it takes to be fully human and describes it in the characters and words of each play.
Okay.
And, you know, what I did was I looked for the places where that seems to happen and put them all together in the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of gratifying to hear that you were taking a class for 40 years.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, you're very well versed in Shakespeare's work as a result of that. And because I was wondering, how on earth did somebody put together this book? Because it's just so chock full of the range of Shakespeare's work as exemplified by all of these profound quotes. Okay, so let's talk about some of these chapters. I mean, there's 25 chapters and we're not gonna be able to touch on all of them, but the first part of the book, part one, addresses the question, who are we? And, you know, so you start out talking about love, the heart energy of humanness. And I thought you had some really profound things to say. You know, one of the things that you say is many of us make the mistake of equating physical beauty with goodness, a common feature of romantic attachment. Can you explicate on that for us?
We think if I have that person who looks so good, I'll always be happy.
Right.
And it's an era. I mean, by coincidence, that could be true. But the older you get, the more do you look for an internal beauty. And so the pretty face doesn't matter quite as much.
Right. But
there is no guarantee that just because someone is nice looking, they will also be good for you in a relationship. And if Shakespeare noticed that, and, you know, I have quotations that show you that.
Right, right. Yeah, it's sort of...
Here's an example.
Yeah, please.
This is from The Taming of the Shrew. Kindness in women, not their beauteous looks, shall win my love. So he's saying, Petruchio, he's saying, I'm looking for the kind of partner who has genuine kindness coming through her rather than somebody who looks beautiful.
Right. Yeah. And I guess it sort of helps as we get older that our eyesight begins to fail. That might help. That might help this object project.
Yeah. When we no longer need it as much.
Now, you also, another thing that you say in that particular chapter is, in a healthy relationship, both partners have equal power, regardless of roles, levels of intelligence, or financial status. And did Shakespeare have something to weigh in on this factor?
Yes. What page were you on?
Oh, heck, I don't know. I extracted it from somewhere in that chapter on love.
This is on the topic of kind of equality about power?
Well, I don't know. It just says, we can just talk about the point itself. In a healthy relationship, both partners have equal power.
Yes. Oh, I did find it. You know, that we're born as equals. So this is a quote from the Comedy of Errors. We came into the world like brother and brother, and now let us go hand in hand, not one before the other.
Uh-huh.
So he's saying, you know, we're all here as equals to, you know, from the very beginning, and let's keep acting that way.
Uh-huh. Okay. So in that section, so part one, you've got a chapter on ego and humility. You've got one on grief. You've got one on fear. You've got one on our shadow side. Then there's the gift of joy. And then knowing and showing our true self. Is there any thing about any of those components that you would like to address?
You didn't mention the anger.
Right.
Yes, I'll give an example. Remember the quotation I gave about, you know, speak up about your grief?
Right.
So, interestingly, in The Taming of the Shrew, he has this statement, which is really the same as the other one, the one from Macbeth, about, you know, show your grief or else it'll break your heart. So compare that to this one. My tongue shall tell the anger of my heart, or else my heart, concealing it, will break. So basically what he's saying, and then I have the same kind of statement on the subject of fear. He says about the same thing there too. He's saying over and over again, you've got to get it out. You can't just keep it stuffed inside. Mm-hmm. If you do, you're going to be in big trouble.
Right. So that's the chapter on expressing healthy anger.
Yeah.
What about the one on working through grief? I mean, you write in there.
That would be the one I quoted before.
Well, I like what you wrote in that chapter somewhere. Grief is how we process impermanence. I found that interesting.
Because you're grieving something that ended or was lost. And so you basically found out that it was impermanent.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. And so when you find out that it's impermanent, that helps letting go in the letting go process.
Yeah.
Okay. And what about joy? The gift of joy is the name of one of the sections.
Yes. The gift of joy. I'll give you one of the quotes along those lines. And of course, sometimes it's hard for us to get to that place of joy, especially with all the terrible things happening in the world. with all my heart, and much it joys me too, to see you become so penitent. So that's Richard III. He's saying when someone comes across and apologizes to you, that would be a source of joy. See, we didn't really think that way.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, just the idea that, oh, somebody's apologizing and they're admitting that I was right. Oh boy, that the ego loves that.
Yeah. And here's one that challenges the ego. So this is from As You Like It. Well, I will forget the condition of my estate and I'll rejoice in yours.
Wow.
So I'm having a hard time, but if you're okay, I'll still have some joy because you're feeling good.
Yeah, I think we've talked
that's
about that.
An example of letting go of ego and self-centeredness.
That reminds me of the Buddhist idea of sympathetic joy or celebrating.
Yes, exactly.
Right. Well, that's beautiful. Then the part
that another's joy.
Part two is about what happens to us, and part three is about spiritual practices. And so, you know, what would you like to pick out of those sections of the book to share with us today?
The very first chapter of What Happens to Us is called When Things Change.
Right.
Showing that one of the givens of life, probably the main given of life, is that everything changes and ends.
Right.
And of course, he has this famous speech, which most people are aware of, from As You Like It. It's all the world's a stage and all the men and women on it merely players. And then he goes through the seven stages that we all go through.
Mm-hmm.
But this quote, I think, has a lot of this other quote, which is from Timon of Athens. one of his minor plays. Men shut their doors against a setting sun. Men shut their doors against a setting. Men shut their doors against a setting sun. We don't like to see something coming to an end, so we just shut the door so we won't notice it. In other words, we can handle reveille, but we can't handle taps.
We can't handle what?
Taps, you know, the bugle blowing taps.
Oh, okay. Well, okay.
We're starting off this.
Oh, reveille. Okay, great.
We don't want to hear taps. He's saying we shut the door against the taps.
I see. Okay. All right.
And that is a characteristic of humans.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, in the one chapter called The Journey to Wholeness, you write, trusting that there is a wholeness already and always richly in us makes us more secure about simply being ourselves. I like that. That's something else that it's really interesting that everything you're writing about it here, you ground it in something that Shakespeare said. And that's fantastic. Now we're almost running out of time. Are there any other quotes or ideas that you'd like to bring up before we go?
Just my favorite one. It's only four words. And it's from A Winter's Tale. Now I will unmask.
Okay.
You know, the point in life when you're finally ready to show yourself as you are with all your warts, not try to look better than you actually are. It's okay with you that people see you just as you are, and you no longer have to put out a particular persona. And that's how you know that you're really loved, when someone is willing to be there for you even when you don't look that great.
That kind of reminds me of the other chapter on the shadow too. It's sort of like unmasking is letting your shadow side be seen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's beautiful. Yeah. Well, I can see. Do you use these quotes in your therapeutic practice? I know you have some clients and you do some psychotherapeutic counseling. Do you quote Shakespeare?
Yeah, I might occasionally bring one of them up.
Thank you.
listening to KBOO Portland.
We all listen. We're in the Fireside Theater. We all listen to this fabulous station in Portland, and it's called KBOO.
It's a Lorenzo Milam original.